The SSPX confronts Rome. The consecrations are scheduled for July 1st. Author's note. I dedicate these words to my editor-in-chief, the Immaculata. May she open all hearts to reconcile with brothers and unite in the one faith and one truth of Christ in his one church, the Holy Roman Catholic Church. O Theotokos, softener of evil hearts, by your sorrows and tears, I beg you to reconcile brothers in Christ. Amen. The announcement has finally come that the SSPX intends to consecrate bishops this year. The press release is very short, so let's read the whole thing from their website. Quote, press release dated 2nd of February, 2026. On the 2nd of February, 2026, the Feast of the Purification of the Blessed Virgin, the Reverend Father David Pagliarani, Superior General of the Priestly Society of St. Pius X, during the ceremony of the taking of the cassock, which he presided over at the International Seminary of St. Croix d'Ars in Flavigny-sur-Azurin, France, publicly announced his decision to entrust the bishops of the society with the task of proceeding with new episcopal consecrations on 1 July next. Last August, he sought the favor of an audience with the Holy Father, making known his desire to present to the Holy Father in a filial manner the current situation of the Priestly Society of Pius X. In a second letter, he explicitly expressed the particular need of the society to ensure the continuation of the ministry of its bishops, who have been traveling the world for nearly 40 years to respond to the many faithful attached to the tradition of the Church and desirous, for the good of their souls, that the sacraments of holy orders and confirmation be conferred. After having long matured his reflection in prayer and having received from the Holy See in recent days a letter which does not in any way correspond to our request, Father Pagliarani, in harmony with the unanimous advice of his council, judges that the objective state of grave necessity in which souls find themselves requires such a decision. The words he wrote on the 21st of November, 2024, for the 50th anniversary of the historic declaration of Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, are more than ever the reflection of his thought and intentions. So at this point, the same press release that I'm reading from quotes from that quotation from Father Pagliarani, which then also quotes Lefebvre. So it's a quote within a quote here. Quote from Father Pagliarani, quote, it is only in the Catholic Church, as it has always been, and in her unchanging tradition, that we have the guarantee of possessing the truth, of being able to preach it, and of being able to serve her. The Society of St. Pius X is not primarily seeking its own survival. It primarily seeks the good of the universal Church, and for this reason, the Society is par excellence a work of the Church, which unique freedom and strength responds adequately to the specific needs of an unprecedentedly tragic era. This single goal is still ours today, just as it was 50 years ago. And now here comes the quote from Archbishop Lefebvre. So the following words are from Archbishop Lefebvre from his declaration in 1974. Quote from Archbishop Lefebvre, quote, that is why, without any spirit, rebellion, bitterness, or resentment, we pursue our work of forming priests with the timeless magisterium as our guide. We are persuaded that we can render no greater service to the Holy Catholic Church, the Sovereign Pontiff, and to posterity. End quote from all of these quotations back to the press release of today's date. In the coming days, the Superior General will provide further explanations regarding the present situation and his decision. Nos cum prole pia benedicat Virgo Maria, may the Virgin Mary bless us together with the Divine Son. From Menzingen, 2nd of February, 2026. End quote. So I'm all done with all those quotes. Sorry about the quote within a quote there, but I'm done with all the quotes now. Okay. Once again, as with other negotiations with the Holy See, we're not sure exactly what was said, written or unwritten, between the priests and superiors of the SSPX and the representatives of the Holy See and her representatives. That's fine. It's not for us to judge them or know their words and intentions. But there are several positions which we do know, and to me, seem to be the areas which need to be addressed by clerical theologians on both sides. Now, let me say that again. Clerical theologians, not laymen like me, who have no competence or authority. I'm just going to lay out these propositions for what they are said to be by the clerics themselves, and then hope and pray that the clerics can work them out, and we don't have another break of communion on our hands, which only would only harm all souls, in my view. So here I'm going to lay out what seems to be the negative positions by the SSPX preventing total reconciliation, and then the negative positions of the Vatican on these issues preventing reconciliation. God is the judge, and it's for the clerics to judge, not me. As a layman, I'm just hoping to bring clerics together to work out these issues, and I'll just do what I can to make that happen. It's not my role to judge, so clerics, please do your job. Okay, so here's the SSPX positions that seem to prevent reconciliation. Number one, the SSPX warns against attendance even at a, quote, reverent novus ordo, end quote, mass, calling it a, quote, poison harmful to the faith, end quote. So that phrase, poison harmful to the faith, is a quote from Lefebvre himself, and is contained in the relevant sections in the official positions of the society. That's from the SSPX's book, Most Asked Questions, a brief summary of the positions of the Society of St. Pius X, 3rd edition, Angelus Press, 2024, pages 151 to 157. All right. While the criticisms of the new rite seem reasonable to me and any traditionalist, this is the position which seems to go too far. Like I said, I'm not a cleric, so I'll let the clerics figure out the theological details. But I am a father, and I teach my children the following. My son, sacramental grace is your whole life. Sacramental grace is everything. It is your whole life. You should desire sacramental grace more than your next breath. If you cannot attend the Holy Mass, then you should burn with all spiritual desire for the Eucharistic heart of Jesus and make a spiritual communion. Therefore, whatever problems with the Novus Ordo Missae exist, how can I tell my child to avoid sacramental grace? It seems to me that there is a metaphysical abyss between the harmful elements of any Novus Ordo, the lackluster rites or words and text of speech and action, which are of human origin, and the reality of sacramental grace, which is nothing less than eternal life of divine origin. The real presence of Jesus Christ, if we meditate on this for just one second, the real presence of Jesus Christ, everything else is nothing in comparison. So perhaps I'm misunderstanding the SSPX here, but this is officially its position according to the document I just cited. If you, dear reader, can provide something better to clarify this position, please do so. Perhaps I've misunderstood the SSPX. Now, when I study Bishop Schneider, it seems to me that he takes a more nuanced view on these trad controversies, which accord more to the truth, in my view. A while back, I asked him about this view of the SSPX, and here's what he said. Now, in the article, if you click on the article below, if you're listening on the podcast, it has the YouTube short where he actually, I ask him about attendance at the Novus Ordo, and Bishop Athanasius Schneider says that it is incorrect to have that view that the SSPX holds. That's his view, even though Bishop Schneider supports the SSPX as I do, but he disagrees with his particular position as I do. Okay, now number two. If a Novus Ordo priest fails in his intention because his faith is corrupted, the Novus Ordo Missae is invalid. Here, I do not know what the official position of the SSPX is, so I assume they have a higher view than what I'm about to say. But here is what the Archbishop said in his famous book, Open Letter to Confused Catholics. Quote, how can we assess the intention of the priest? It is obvious that there are fewer and fewer valid masses as the faith of priests becomes corrupted, and they no longer have the intention to do what the church, which cannot change her intention, has always done. The present day training of those who are called seminarians does not prepare them to accomplish valid masses. They are no longer taught to consider the holy sacrifice as the essential action of their priestly life, end quote. So that's from Archbishop Lefebvre, an open letter to confused Catholics, translation of Crowdy, as from the 1986 edition, page 35. Perhaps the Archbishop explains himself in more detail somewhere else. In fact, I'm sure he does on such a critically important pastoral question. But he says this in passing. Perhaps the original French gave a more precise discussion at that point. In any event, there seems to be an idea among some traditionalists that the Novus Ordo Missae is valid per se, which the SSBX indeed affirms, but that it is often invalid due to a defect in the priest's faith. The reasoning goes like this. Number one, we know that there are many heretic priests who do not believe in the dogma of the real presence. That's true. We should all agree with that. We know that that's true, right? Okay. Number two, we also know that the Novus Ordo diminishes the rites which safeguard the same dogma. We also know that's true. Also an indisputable fact. The difficult part is the conclusion of this syllogism. Number three, therefore, these heretic priests who disbelieve the dogma using a defective ritual, therefore do not confect a valid sacrament. Now, this is the vulgar layman's argument. Of course, like I said, I assume the SSPX clerics have a much better argument, and so I'm trying to emphasize that this is probably not what they say. I'm sure Archbishop Lefebvre has a more precise position somewhere in his text. And like I said above, readers, if you want to give me a better citation here, please do. In any event, I have heard this view from lay people, and this position is at least implied by the words I quoted above from the Archbishop himself, and this position is false. Why is this false? Because the Holy Office clarified that the bare minimum for validity is actually much lower than that. To make this abundantly clear, since this is a very important question that interests many of our readers, let me provide the following quotes in full. Okay, so now I'm going to quote two large quotations, and I'm going to quote them. They're large quotations, and the reason I'm quoting them these large quotations because the issue is so important. But these quotations make it very abundantly clear what really is that bare minimum, and it's not the priest's faith. Okay, so Sacred Congregation of the Holy Office, December 18, 1872, dubium quo ad baptisma administratam ab hereticis. In some places, some heretics baptized with the proper matter and the form simultaneously applied, but they expressly warn the baptizans not to believe that baptism has any effect upon the soul, for they say that it is merely the external sign of aggregation of the sex. And so often the Catholics in their own crowd turn around their belief about the effects of baptism and call it superstitious. Question one. Whether baptism administered by those heretics is doubtful on account of the defect of intention to do what Christ willed, if an express declaration was made by the minister before he baptized that baptism had no effect on the soul. Reply to the first question, in the negative. Because despite the error about the effect of baptism, the intention of doing with the church is not excluded. Question two. Whether baptism is so conferred is doubtful if the aforementioned declaration was not expressly made immediately before the conferring of baptism, but had often been asserted by the minister, and the same doctrine was openly preached in that sect. Reply to the second question, provided for in the answer to the first. That's the Holy Office, 18th of December, 1872. Okay. So, in other words, what the Holy Office is saying is that even if a heretic has form and matter, and they expressly say, do not believe that this sacrament it confers sacramental grace or anything like that, and I don't believe that, and then does it, that's still a valid sacrament. Because the intention is not the intention of the effect, but it's the intention to do what the church does. So we'll get back to that in a minute. Okay, let's have another quotation. This is also from a similar dubium sent to the Holy Office in the 19th century. Quote, the Bishop of Nesqually had addressed to the propaganda an inquiry concerning the validity of baptism conferred by Methodists, against the validity of whose baptism he alleged an insufficient and adverse intention and consequently the presumption of invalidity. The bishop stated that the Methodists held so many errors about the necessity, the power, and the efficacy of the sacrament of baptism that they considered it merely an indifferent rite which had been entirely omitted in the past, and at a later time had been put into use again for the purpose of deceiving the faithful and attempted to show them that their false religion did not differ from the true religion. Okay, so in other words, these particular Methodists just like go wild when they baptize someone, and they just go on and on about why this is not a true baptism, and they just, you know, it's a pure poisonous heresy that they preach while they baptize. Okay. To this question, the Holy Office gave a very detailed answer, which is one of the most explicit statements about the intention of doing what the church does. In substance, the reply lays down the following principles. Number one, it is a dogma of the faith that baptism administered by anyone, whether a schismatic, a heretic, or even an infidel, must be considered valid as long as in their administration those things are present by which the sacrament is perfected, namely due matter, the prescribed form, and the person of the minister with the intention of doing what the church does. Hence, it follows that the peculiar errors with the minister profess, either privately or publicly, do not at all affect baptism or any other sacrament. Number two, the errors which the heretics profess privately or publicly are not incompatible with the intention which the ministers of the sacraments must have, namely of doing what the church does. Those errors in themselves cannot give rise to a general presumption against the validity of the sacraments in general and baptism in particular. From these principles taken from the decision of the Holy Office, it must be concluded that as a general rule, the baptisms of heretics are valid in spite of the fact that their ministers hold beliefs entirely incompatible with the Catholic doctrine concerning baptism and deny all power of regeneration in that sacrament. Their error does not offer sufficient reason to conclude that they have an insufficient or adverse intention in regard to conferring the sacrament. Okay, so all of this quotation is from Reverend Raphael OSB, The Dogmatic Theology on the Intention of the Minister and the Confection of the Sacraments, 1949. So this is a dogmatic manual, and it's quoting the Holy Office from a reply on January 24th, 1877. Now, St. Robert Bellarmine summarizes these responsa a few centuries before they were given. Quote, "The Council of Trent does not mention the purpose of the sacrament or say that the minister ought to intend to do what the church intends, but what the church does. Moreover, what the church does refers to the action, not the purpose. There is required the intention with regard to the action, not insofar as it is a natural action, but insofar as it is a sacred or ceremonial action, which Christ instituted or Christians practice. If one intends to perform the ceremony which the church performs, that is enough." End quote. Bellarmine, De Sacramentis de Ingenera, chapter 27. End quote. So in other words, the intention has nothing to do with the faith. In other words, it's literally this person takes this form, which is the words, takes this matter, and then puts them together in a ceremony. And that's the intention right there. Because they put them together in a ceremony, they do what the church does. Therefore, they're clearly intending to do what the church does, which is a totally objective fact. I don't need to know anything about what's inside this priest's heart, because I can see right there that he's doing what the church intends to do, because he's putting the form and matter together in a ceremony. That is the bare minimum for validity right there. So these quotations, continuing with my article, these quotations both come from this article, quote it, and you can click the link in the article, from the SSPS critics John Selza and Robert Sisco. Credit where credit is due. Although I personally disagree with these two in their critical view of the SSPX, which seems excessive to me, on this point, I don't see any way around it. These two positions of the SSPX, the first, the official position, the second, unofficial and held by some lay faithful, seem to be untenable positions. The first, official position, seems to suggest that the SSPX wants to have 1 billion faithful around the world avoid the Novus Ordo Missae, even if it's totally reverent, and as a result, deprive themselves of sacramental grace. This seems like an untenable pastoral solution to the new iconoclasm, but I cannot tell any soul to stay away from sacramental grace. Who am I to say such a thing? Now, the second position seems to be shared by some lay faithful, but seems to be obviously bad sacramental theology, which leads to depriving more faithful of the life-giving fount of sacramental grace. So, like I said, I'm not a theologian and I don't want to be, but I have to teach my children about the basics of the spiritual life, and as far as I can read the tradition, sacramental grace is everything. And if I'm not at all off course with this instinct that I can see why the Holy See has a problem with this. Does the SSPX teach the faithful to not attend the Novus Ordo Missae, even if that Novus Ordo presumably is celebrated by the Holy Father himself? This would seem to be a red flag for the Holy See. Okay, now, Roman positions that need to be addressed. Number one, the Latin Mass must be liberated forever. Summorum Pontificum was a positive fruit of the SSPX dialogue with Rome. Because the SSPX fought for the tradition, they forced the issue and brought the new iconoclasm to the light in defending the fate of little ones spiritually abused by bad clerics, abusing the Blessed Sacrament and destroying the faith of children. Joseph Ratzinger agreed with them from the start, as he says in Milestones, and the force of tradition itself in Ratzinger's mind, with pressure from the SSPX, brought about Summorum Pontificum, which benefited every Latin Rite priest worldwide. Moreover, Summorum Pontificum vindicated the central claim of the SSPX that is contained in the 1974 declaration above implicitly, that the Latin Church, the Church of Rome in particular, cannot deny her own right, period. Therefore, the abolition of the Roman Rite, the ancient apostolic Roman Rite, aka the Latin Mass, is an unjust law which must be disobeyed by every cleric, period, full stop. End this madness, we beg you, your holiness, most holy father. Number two, the controversial teachings of Vatican II are non-dogmatic. The Vatican official representative to the dialogue with the SSPX admitted that the disputed teachings from Vatican II are non-dogmatic. So if you go to the article, you can click on, so it was Monsignor Pozzo who said this in their dialogue, and he's the official Vatican competent authority, all right? So you can click on the links there for the sources on that. This is the positive fruit of the SSPX Rome dialogue. The Holy See can admit, without loss of face or honor, as it were, that every paragraph of Vatican II must be understood according to its precise theological note. And that's actually what Lumen Gentium actually says already in its appendix. So they can admit that without dishonoring the Holy See. Hence, when the SSPX signed their original agreement of 1988, they were only required to assent to paragraph 25 of Lumen Gentium, even though the SSPX actually believed more doctrines from Vatican II than the mass majority of neo-modernists claiming to, quote, follow Vatican II. Number three. End the double standard. Neo-modernist child abusers get parishes. The reality is this. Whatever problems might exist with the SSPX and their positions I outlined above, the wolves in shepherd's clothing are worldwide devouring souls and leading them to hell. The SSPX has its own problems, like every order of priests, but the fact that they, and they alone, it seems, are the ones who receive no mercy is a slap in the face to every man, woman, and child seeking the water of Eucharistic reverence in a desert of heresy and wicked clericalism. For the sake of souls, Holy Father, please regularize the SSPX. Set them free to do their work in peace in every diocese, and let the faithful attend their masses in peace and get on with the business of saving their souls. Whatever happens next, Viva Cristo Rey.